College of Pharmacy. We're back again. This week, we have Dr. Logan here, who is a board-certified psychiatric pharmacist, to talk to us about mental health in pharmacy. Hello, Dr. Logan. Thank you so much for joining us today. Could you please tell us a little about yourself and your background?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to sharing a bit of pharmacy that is very near and dear to my heart. I have a long background in pharmacy. I've done a little bit of everything. But when I came to work at the College of Pharmacy, the position that I was offered was split between the College of Education and the College of Pharmacy. And I was told to make a presentation that would discuss that. So I wrote all about school nurses. And lo and behold, I was really being interviewed for the Center for Evaluation that is over in the College of Education, and that is the counseling psych program here at the University of Georgia. So between school psych and counseling psych, I attend three different staffings with the counseling students to look at how what medications their patients may be using, what medical conditions they may have, and how we may need to consider that when looking at their psychiatric diagnosis. I attend school psychology staffing where we actually have second year school psychology students that are doing assessment testing on kids up to age 18. And they are doing intelligence testing, looking for learning disabilities and, you know, whether they have any type of psychiatric diagnosis. And because I'm over there all the time, we take a whole bunch of students over there. So I've got pharmacy students that are with me in Adderhold at the Center for Evaluation. We now have a team over at Mercy where we're doing holistic behavioral health with pharmacy, counseling psych, nursing, medicine, and social work. And then I also have a didactic class where I teach psychopharmacology to the counseling psych students. And that is a required course for them. And this spring is the second year I've actually taught that course to pharmacy students.
Could you describe what a psychiatric pharmacist is and kind of what their role is in improving mental health?
Well, a psychiatric pharmacist, for those folks that have gone forward and done a PGY2 residency, obviously they're looking for a place where they're going to have a lot of patients with mental health, and that can either be inpatient or outpatient. We've got hospital systems that will provide that kind of environment. And also the VA system is a very large employer of psychiatric pharmacists to help with the VA population. That's probably one of the biggest places that hires them and also trains them. There are a lot of VA psych PGY2 residencies. But you don't necessarily have to even work in that environment. We have Lindsay McCoy, who works over in Village Drugs at Advantage here in Athens, and she is working out of a regular pharmacy, but she is able to interact with the mental health team at Advantage to help with the patients in the crisis unit, patients that are getting long-acting injectable antipsychotics. What's really cool about being a psychiatric pharmacist, though, is because we have all that other background, too, we're also able to look at and help take care of the patient's blood pressure and their diabetes, because when people have mental health problems, adherent to their therapy is not always high on their list of things to do. So if they're depressed and we're not getting them to take their antidepressant, we probably aren't getting them to take their insulin. So from that standpoint, I think we're also looking at the whole person and all the other comorbidities of their health that are being affected by their mental health diagnosis.
I just recently encountered this phrase, competing priority, which is when if you don't have something, you put another thing over the other. So it just reminded me of that.
And that's a great comment, because the patient is trying to survive and the depression at that point is their priority.
With that, how prevalent are mental health issues in pharmacy?
Well, we all know that pharmacy school can be a little stressful. However, there was an article I read recently where it was looking at the depression and anxiety symptoms that medical students and pharmacy students were experiencing. And the pharmacy and med students were experiencing about the same amount of depression. Pharmacy students had more anxiety, and pharmacy students were less likely to go get help. So, you know, I highly suspect that we've got quite a number of anxious pharmacy students. And, you know, a little bit of anxiety is normal in life, but but you guys have lots of tests, which give you lots of opportunities to get a little anxious. So, you know, mental health is huge. And then, you know, when we throw the pandemic on top of it, everything changed. And it almost looks like every statistic, every article that I'm reading is 40% of the population, whether it's pharmacy, medicine, everybody's at like 40% depression and anxiety. And, you know, we've had increases in suicide attempts. We've had increases with suicidal ideation. And, you know, young people are really coming forward right now, even the standpoint of the K-12 group, who they don't see their friends. They're stuck at home with their parents all day long. And that'll make you anxious. So it's added a lot of stress. You know, if you even consider some of all of the many things that I lovingly call the isms, because there are lots of isms. You've got racism, ableism, you know, mental health, sexism, you name it. But if you look at the folks that have been really impacted by that, those are also the people who generally have a higher degree of mental health issue. And the pandemic has just made that even worse. If you consider LGBTQ students who have not come out at home, they just spent a year at the house with people who don't know who they really are. And so they haven't been able to fulfill their identity the way they want to. And that's going to cause a lot of stress and depression.
So how can we as pharmacy students and pharmacists screen for patients and help those who are struggling with mental health conditions?
One of the methods that is currently available is a course called Mental Health First Aid. And we raised money, and my goal is to see every pharmacy student and every pharmacist and faculty and the staff in the building take this course. Because what it does is not only does it make it easier to have those conversations when you see someone who is in distress, it also makes you more aware of maybe when you're in distress. And we need to understand that it is okay to say, do you think you're going to hurt yourself? Because if you don't flat out ask, you might not know. And it's an okay conversation to have. At worst, they're going to say, no, I'm not going to, which would be great. But you also are letting someone know that you hear them. And there are ways to have this conversation. There are ways to see in behaviors how you can assist. And even Walgreens has implemented this with folks in their human resources department and some of their clinical pharmacists out in the world to be able to see that in the pharmacists that are working for them. You know, if someone were to call HR, the person in HR has had this, they can recognize that there's someone in distress there. I thought that was pretty far reaching for them to do. And, you know, it's really interesting. People say there's a pharmacist on every corner, and there is, but each of those pharmacists is overwhelmed with lots of stuff to do. So doing mental health screening on every human that walks into your pharmacy is going to end up requiring you get some help, because that's a lot. And I think that from the standpoint of a community pharmacist, the best thing that can be done, not only in paying attention to your colleagues and your techs and your interns, but know who your patients are who are getting some of these psychotropic medications and take the time to explain to them why and how they need to take their medicine. You know, in America, we all like the quick fix. Give me a pill and make me better. And that doesn't work with these medications. They're all taking 4 to 6 weeks, and then you have to increase doses, and then it doesn't work and you have to change the medication. And so it truly has to be a commitment with the patient, the prescriber, the therapist, and the pharmacist to work toward ensuring that patient is adherent. Usually by the 4th month of taking prescriptions, half of the people have stopped taking them. And if you don't take them, they're certainly not going to work.
I think you also mentioned before that it can be difficult for a pharmacy student to reach out for help. Do you think that might have something to do with some social stigma?
Stigma is a huge issue with mental health. I believe that it is becoming less as more people are coming forward and saying that they have got mental health issues. We have several students that we see over in Adderhold who don't want their parents to know that they're getting mental health services because they don't believe in that. You know, there's cultural issues associated with all this, with folks whose parents are newly immigrated and they feel that if a mental health issue is a weakness. You know, the social media makes jokes. We've got movies and televisions that really present mental health patients or people with mental health diseases as violent and dangerous. They're just regular people who want to have people take them seriously and help them out. And it is a challenge. And I think that we tend to have a stigma or avoid things that we fear and things that we don't know a lot about. And I think that that's where all of this kind of intersectionality of race, sexual orientation, your mental health, all of these are all crossing together, and all of them have multiple stigmas associated with them. It's really important for us to take a step back individually and recognize what our own personal biases or stigmas might be, because if you don't know you have it, you can't necessarily overcome it. And I think that, you know, the more that you guys are exposed to patients that have got different disorders, whether it is, you know, a mental health diagnosis that we're dealing with, or trans female that's going through and having the hormone replacement done, you have to see it and hear it, know what it is you need to do and how you need to respond if that's an area of life that you're not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And all of those folks seem to end up needing emotional support because of the way the world perceives them. And I want to change that. Omar today had a great word for it, that instead of having disproportionate, marginalized, and underserved areas, we had untapped areas. So we have to be able to have courageous conversations, whether it's around mental health, whether it's around race, whether it's around gender orientation, whether it's around anything that is causing someone else discomfort mm-hmm. and harming them. We need to be willing to have these conversations. And so I appreciate you guys being willing to bring them forward to the college.
Yeah. So I know most of us are out working in communities or hospitals. So as interns, I know you talked about having those conversations, but what are also some common medications that we can look out for that may adversely impact one's mental health?
Well, there's several things that you would want to think about. If you were, for instance, working in a hospital and you're doing a medication reconciliation, and you see that a patient was on several medications for depression, anxiety at home, but now that they've come into the hospital for whatever, you know, for surgery, the doctors didn't continue them. Well, that's not going to be very good, because the patients are going to start going through withdrawal symptoms for not having their antidepressants on board. So then when they're trying to assess, you know, mental status and pain status, that could be confused in a person who is also going through withdrawal from their psychotropic medications. I've had patients that have had bipolar and schizophrenic diagnoses where their antipsychotics aren't continued. So in the hospital, it's really super important to make sure that medications are continued from outpatient to inpatient if it is medically appropriate. And from the standpoint of a community pharmacist, I think that, you know, any patient with a psychotropic medication, you need to be aware of the fact that discontinuing it needs to be done carefully. And doctors tend to taper quickly. And that is great for a lot of people, but some people need a lot longer taper. And that's another place where pharmacists can come in and guide them in how to stretch out that taper to make it work a little better and last a little longer.
Do you know any resources, or how would we know how to get them to taper off?
If you go and Google CPNP and guidelines, it will take you to the CPNP webpage and to the guidelines, and they have toolboxes and all sorts of other little goodies that will give you that kind of information if you needed it quickly. Rule of thumb, depending on how the patient is feeling, you know, I usually half it for a week, then half that for a week, and then half that for a week, and see how things are going. And if at any point in time they start having withdrawal symptoms, then you can just go back up to the previous dose and lengthen the time that you're going to taper it, maybe do it for 2 weeks. And I mean, I've gotten to the point myself taking a medication where I was taking a bite off of a half of a small tablet, and it like every 10 days. If you had told me this as a pharmacist that this is what you were doing, I'd have been like, yeah, right, you're crazy, but that's okay. But until it happened to me, and it was like the seventh day, I would wake up and have that weird withdrawal feeling. It's like, okay, time for a little bite. And I'd take a bite of it, and it would work until I noticed it was at 10 days. And then finally it disappeared. So everybody's a little bit different, but there's lots of switching around and adding and changing when trying to find just the right combination of medications for each individual person. And it's important that they understand we're not using them as guinea pigs, that we have to start somewhere and then we will take their symptoms and how they're feeling and add or change based on that. But it definitely requires working together.
So I think we can all agree that this pandemic has taken a toll on a lot of people's mental health. And how do you deal with high stress situations?
One of the things that's really important, especially with the pandemic, is remembering to keep a balance in your life. And that can get overwhelming. So learning to say no, which is not one of my high suits. I mean, Dr. Duke has to remind me every once in a while, you don't have to say yes. Having great colleagues who will tell you things like that is very important. As cliche as it sounds, mindfulness is a very important thing. Exercise, getting fresh air, all of those things are really important in taking care of yourself, eating well, getting enough sleep. All of those lifestyle things that we tell our patients about really and truly are beneficial in maintaining our mental health. In doing that, you also have to remember to give yourself a little bit of grace and recognize that sometimes, you're going to blow it. You're not going to get it done. And, it's okay. You just got to take a deep breath and go on one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, whatever it has to be, depending upon how overwhelmed you seem. You can only do one thing at a time, right? So whichever one comes first is the one, do it and let go. Because getting upset, getting excited, getting overwhelmed is going to just feed into making you feel worse. And then you won't get anything done. Deep breaths. Breathe in, breathe out.
I guess we should all take a deep breath, huh? And let it out.
Lots of deep breaths.
Thank you so much, Dr. Logan, for taking the time to speak to us. Thank you again to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you've learned some valuable information that you may use to help you during these times. As always, stay awesome, stay healthy, and go Dawgs!